Hello, everyone, and welcome to Minute 36 of Movie Rob Minute, the daily podcast where we take a wild trip through the 1987 John Hughes comedy Planes, Trains, and Automobiles 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me today, and hopefully all week, is Bubble Wheat of Flights, Tights, and Movie Nights. Welcome to the show, Bubble Wheat.
Thanks. It's good to be here.
Yeah. I'm glad I was finally able to get you on one of my shows. I've been on yours, you know, so I figured, why not? I can try and get you on mine one of these days.
Yeah.
All right. So minute 36 begins with Neil and Dell having a discussion in the back of the truck and ends with Neil returning his wallet to his pocket. So Friday, we had the whole story with Owen showing up and deciding that he's going to be taking Neil and Dell to Stubbsville because they actually want to get to a train station that it's a people train station as opposed to one that takes hog or cattle. So the minute ended with them talking about how far it is to get to Stubbsville. So we discussed one of the things last week about the fact that there is no Stubbsville. It's a completely fictitious place. Mm-hmm. And in the script itself, they also talk about the fact, I mean, in reality, there really isn't a train station in Wichita. You have to go to a nearby city known as Newton, which is about 25 miles away from Wichita. So in the original script, it actually mentions Newton. It doesn't say anything about Stubbsville. So I don't know why or how they came up with the idea to change it to Stubbsville, but they did.
I think it might have to do just with the fact that, you know, since they weren't really allowed to use any real-life transportation companies, that having this fictional town gives them, you know, another step removed from any actual train stations.
Right. Okay, that's true. I mean, it's not that they weren't allowed to, it's just that nobody was willing to endorse them because of everything that happens throughout this movie. That's more or less what it comes to. No, but like, for instance, they did, you know, theoretically use the Wichita airport. So if you're using a general airport, obviously, you know, they changed the name of the airline, and here they're going to change the name of the train company, which we'll talk about. And at the end of the week, we'll talk about how the bus company changed the name also. I mean, when you're talking about a specific carrier, so it makes sense that they would change it, but you don't have to change, I would think you don't have to change a place. So I just find it interesting that they decided to change the name of it. Maybe it just sounds funnier saying Stubbsville, you know, the way that Owen said it last week, Stubbsville, instead of, you know, saying Newton or something like that.
Yeah, I did read that Dylan Baker did a lot of improvisation, so maybe he was the one that came up with that name as just like a random name that he thought sounded better as this character.
It could be. I mean, later on in this minute, we actually will see a sign that says Stubbsville. So, you know, his improvisation, I don't know if they would have been too happy if you know, I'd have to start changing signs and stuff like that because of that. So it seems to me that it was something that was somewhat planned in order to change it.
But yeah, I think the other possibility is just, you know, there's not a lot of different train station or train companies.
Right. That's true. But again, we're not talking about the train company. We're talking about the train station itself. So whatever, doesn't really make a difference. So the two of them are in the back of this pickup truck. And basically Dell says, he finishes his sentence from Friday, where Neil asked him how much further it is. And he goes, 30 miles, maybe 40. So, I mean, as we said, Newton is 25 miles away. So it goes to show that Dell clearly doesn't really know how far it is. You know, he's just guessing. It's, you know,
and I think he even says like 70 miles if he takes the back roads.
Yeah. He continues by going, goes 30 miles, maybe 40, no more than 45, though, depending on which way he goes. If he goes the back roads, it could be anywhere up to 70 miles. So, you know, he's just showing that it could be anything. I mean, driving 70 miles instead of 25 miles is pretty strange. You know, you'd think that Owen would want to get him there as fast as possible, not give him the scenic route like Doobie did a few weeks ago. I don't really know. Mm-hmm. I mean, it is daylight as opposed to what Doobie did, you know, in the middle of the night by giving him the scenic route because he's new to Wichita. Who knows? Now, You see that while they're sitting in the back of the truck, all this hay is like flying on them. It's very strange to me the direction that the hay is flying. It's like flying from Dell onto Neil. You know, you'd think that that it would be coming from in front of them or in back of them or whatever. You know, I mean, they're sitting backwards, so you know, you think it would come from the bed of the truck itself. So it's just very strange. It looks like, I mean, when you scrutinize this and look at it from a perspective of a minute by minute, it looks like someone's just throwing hay on them. You know, there's some guy on the side just throwing hay. Actually, you know what? If you look, wow, I didn't even notice this. If you look in the windshield when that hay is moving, it looks like you might even see a hand that looks like it might be throwing things. Do you see what I'm talking about? Is that possible? Or is that the hand? Is that Owen's hand inside the car? I'm not really sure. Who knows? Could be. So as they're doing this, Neil just closes his eyes to show that he is freezing. He is so cold. I mean, as you know, the movie goes back over and over to the same joke the whole time about the fact that Neil forgot his gloves when he was in New York because he didn't need them. And you know, we keep finding places where Neil actually needed his gloves.
Yeah, I've looked again, and the hand I'm pretty sure is the passenger inside, not a
Oh,
reflection.
okay. All right. It could be. It looked very strange, though. It did look a little suspicious, because it does look like someone is just throwing that hay on them.
Yeah, definitely.
You know. And then Neil sees a pair of gloves sitting in the hay and says, "Wow!" He's able to finally get a pair of gloves, and he starts contemplating whether he wants to grab them or not. And as he starts reaching towards them, a dog pops out from the hay. Now, I didn't think the hay was that deep. I mean, that dog was really buried very deep in this. And you know, let's say they've been traveling for a few miles already. You know, they didn't notice something moving around. That the dog was sleeping under. Maybe the dog was that cold also. I don't know.
Yeah, I think it's probably like the dog's underneath a tarp, and
That.
then there's hay covering the tarp.
Yeah, it didn't seem that way, but that's possible. I think that's a tarp. I mean, it looks like a trap door type of thing, but I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, just the way they filmed it,
Right.
there might be some type of trap door or
Right.
indentation
Right. That's true.
just to make it look taller, but in terms of how the like within in universe explanation, there's probably a blanket or a tarp that the dog was laying underneath to stay warm,
Right.
and then a thin layer of hay over the top of it.
And then he saw Neil reaching for the gloves and decided to bark at him. Now, are you a dog person or not?
Not too much. I mean, I don't mind dogs, but I'm generally more of a cat person.
Right. Okay, well, I'm not a dog person at all. Everyone in my family wants to get a dog except for me, and I refuse to allow them to get it because I know that if they get a dog, I'm the one who's going to get stuck walking it. I'm the one who's going to get stuck doing anything. And if I don't want it, so you know, it's not going to happen because of that fact. My brother had the same issue a few years ago. He's the only one who didn't want one, and they eventually convinced him to get one, and he was stuck doing all the chores with the dog, and they ended up just getting rid of it in the end. So you know, it wasn't the thing. So I did a little bit of research to find out what type of dog this is. Okay, so this is known as an Australian cattle dog. Okay, which is a dog that originated in Australia, and it was bred as a herding dog in order to drive cattle over long distances across rough terrain. Okay, they usually have a white coat. They're either brown or black, but most of them have a lot of white on them also, and it gives them an appearance of looking either red or blue. All right, so I mean, a little bit of the history of these dogs is that there was a man named Thomas Hall during the 19th century in New South Wales, Australia, who was a cattle farmer who decided to cross different types of dogs. He crossed what were the dogs used by drovers, which are with dingoes. Dingoes are, I think, a type of wolf, right? If I remember correctly. And they ended up creating this breed known as Hull's Heelers because, named after him. And these dogs eventually led to two different types of modern breeds. One is known as the Australian Cattle Dog, and the other one is the Australian Stumpy Tail Cattle Dog. So they're usually known as either a red heeler or a blue heeler. As we mentioned before, they usually have like a hue to them, either reddish or bluish. And they eventually brought them to America after World War II, because there were a lot of soldiers who were stationed in Australia during World War II, American soldiers, that decided to actually start bringing them back. And then a cattle rancher in Napa, California, by the name of Greg Lauger, Lugher, who decided that he would actually import these type of dogs in order to use them to help drive cattle in America. So I found that to be quite interesting, even though I'm not a dog person.
Yeah.
So then Neil, it's funny how Neil and Dell are both completely surprised by the fact that this dog, they got into the back of this truck, they walked around, they put their bags down and everything. They didn't notice there was a dog there. And just when they want to actually take the gloves, that's when, things start really going crazy for them. And Neil looks at Dell, and Dell is just as surprised as him, the two of them. So it's pretty funny. Now, one of the things that I was reading about these dogs is that the reason that they were so good at driving cattle is that what they would do is they would nip at the heels of the various cattle in order to get them to move. And that's specifically what happens here,
Yeah.
because at then Neil starts screaming at the dog, "Give me the glove, give me the glove." And then he says he just nipped this little part, meaning this dog.
Yeah, and I love the way Steve Martin
Yes.
like twiddles his hands
Yeah.
during that moment.
Yeah. But I like the fact that they mentioned the fact that it's, he nipped it, because that's something that is very common with this type of dog. So they apparently did their research also when they did this. Now we can also see the there's their luggage is strewn around the back of the pickup. You can see a red toolbox also. You can see you can in, whenever we see the shots of Neil and Dell, you see a shotgun in the back of the window behind them that Owen must take with him everywhere he goes. But you also see Dell's trunk, and you see his blue sports bag also and stuff like that. So that's pretty good. Then we get a shot of the truck speeding down the highway or down the road. So it's not a highway that they're going through. So I didn't check what routes people take in order to get from Wichita to Newton or Stubbsville, whatever you want to call it at this point. But the fact that Dell mentions the fact that if they would have taken, they can go the back roads, and that would take up to 70 miles. So I wonder at this point if that means that that's what Owen decided to do, because this does not look like a highway.
Yeah, I imagine that he's just the type of character that he seems to be, that he's more familiar with the back roads and he would rather not go on the highway. And also considering the shape of his truck, maybe his truck rattles too much if it gets
That's a
going
possibility
too high
too.
speeds. So he needs
You're
to
right.
keep it at
That
lower
actually would make
speeds.
sense. And then Dell screams at the dog, "Give him the goddamn glove." And they see the two of them. Now, what's great is we see the truck going across the road, down the road, but we only hear Neil and Dell talking. So this must have been 80 yards in later. They have this little conversation where Neil says to Dell, "Are we there yet?" And Dell says, "Nope. A little way to go yet." Beautiful country though, isn't it? Which says a lot about the character of Dell. That he is still
Yeah,
completely.
the eternal
He
optimist.
is still looking at the fact, well, it's still a, we get a nice view along the way. Why not? So at this point, they continue down the road, and then we hear Neil ask Del, "So what do you think the temperature is?" And the response is 1. It actually looks even colder than that.
And you know that. Yeah, it definitely seems pretty cold out there, and I think even at 1 degrees, there is a potential danger of them getting frostbite, because with them being in the back of the truck, that even if it's not, even if there's no direct wind chill, just the wind chill from the truck, if it gets to be about below 15 below zero, that's when you really start getting into the dangers of frostbite if you're outside unprotected for long periods of time. Like I think about half an hour is when you might start getting signs of frostbite.
But you know, hey, it's only half hour through 40 minutes. Sorry, the 30 miles, 40 miles. Mm-hmm. That's what it is. So then they reach Stubbsville. And as they're turning into Stubbsville, we actually get to see a horse and buggy walking by. Or driving by, which shows that they're in Amish country, or at least they're close to Amish country. So I always believed, I mean, I grew up in Michigan, and we used to travel quite often between the East Coast and Michigan. So we drive a lot through Pennsylvania. So we would see a lot of Amish along the way. But I always...
Yeah, I am. You know, I work at an arcade and in the Midwest, and I've worked in the Illinois, Kentucky, Indiana area, and I definitely had times whenever like Amish families would actually come into the arcade.
That's interesting. So, I mean,
yeah. Because they would still be playing the games, but they would be like in, the full Amish.
Right. So, setups. I mean, I always...
Like with the bonnet. Right.
I always thought the Amish were almost entirely in Pennsylvania. And so I did a little bit of research and found out that that is not true at all. First of all, there is quite a large Amish community in Kansas, which is obviously where we are. So first of all, I wanted to check what the Amish are, like who the Amish are. So what do you know about the Amish people?
Do you know anything about their history? I think there's actually a few different offshoots that people mistake for Amish. They're all lumped in together in like the general consensus as being Amish. But I think that there's actually two or three
there was an offshoot,
like religious groups.
They originally started off together, and then there was an offshoot between them. I mean, it started off with the fact that the Amish were a group of traditionalist Christian church followers who were mostly in Switzerland, Germany, that area and stuff like that. And they were Mennonites. And they're known for being for people who enjoy simple living, plain dress, and Christian pacifism. And they're very slow in adopting many of the conveniences of modern technology, which is something that sets them quite apart from many other religious sects that we know. So they were.
Yeah, I think the general concept that people think of Amish is that, like, they don't have any electricity, they don't have any motor vehicles, they prefer horse and buggies. But I believe I read that they actually do use electricity
we'll get
to
there
some
in a few
extent.
Seconds. I actually have a spreadsheet about that I found about that. So first of all, they they moved to America because they were being persecuted in Germany, and they settled in. They're actually Amish in 31 different states, but 2/3 of them are located in Pennsylvania, Ohio, and Indiana. Most, the largest concentration of them, they live in Northeast Ohio, about 75 miles south of Cleveland. And then you have the next group is a large group in Northeastern Indiana. And then we have the settlements in Lancaster, Pennsylvania. which is the one that most people are more aware of, I guess you can say, unless you're living in that. So currently there are more than 350,000 Amish people in the US, and that number is always growing because they usually have very large families. Most families have an average of 7 children, and their church member retention rate is approximately 80%. So they're constantly growing throughout that. So most of them came to Pennsylvania in the 18th century. So it was the beginning of the 1700s when it happened. There were about 500 Amish people that immigrated to North America between 1717 and 1750. And then they started moving a little bit further because of the French and Indian War, which caused a little bit of problems for them, especially since they're pacifists and wanted to stay as far away from the battles as possible. And they eventually settled in Lancaster County, which is where the core of their group came. And then about 100 years later, in the middle of the 19th century, another 1,500 arrived, and then they started spreading out to Ohio, Illinois, Iowa, Southern Ontario. And then there was a split between them because they're among the different, I guess, migrations or immigrations. So they had different views, and therefore, as you mentioned earlier, there are different sects of the Amish people, and they do different things. As you mentioned about their clothing. So most of the time, the men wear solid colored shirts, broad brimmed hats, and suits that signify similarity, so that they all look pretty much like one another. They grow beards, and after they get married, but they are forbidden to grow mustaches because the mustaches are seen by the Amish as being affiliated with the military. And since they're pacifists, they wanted to. I mean, I never knew that. I always saw pictures of Amish people, or saw Amish people without Amish men without mustaches, and I never knew the reason. So it's interesting that it has to do with the fact that they think that mustaches deal with the military. Not really sure why, but okay. The women usually wear bonnets and aprons, and they have prayer caps or bonnets that the women wear, which are a visual representative of their religious beliefs and promote unity through the tradition of every woman wearing one. Again, I think part of the whole idea of their religion is that conformity, that everyone is pretty much the same. So, I mean, I can go on and on about all this stuff, but they talk about the fact that the color of the bonnet is different whether the woman is married or single, and they're not allowed to wear jewelry, not even wedding rings. And therefore, if you have a different color bonnet, that's what shows that you're married, as opposed to anything else. So you mentioned before about the whole fact that as most people are aware, Amish people don't use electricity. So I found a table that talks about the percentage of Amish people who use various types of electricity. So there 6% of the population use tractors for field work, as opposed to just using a regular plow. Okay. Then you have 20% that use a rototiller in order to help with their plowing. Then we have 25% that will use a power lawnmower. Then you have 30% that use propane gas. 35% will use a bulk milk tank. 35% use a mechanical milker. 40% will use a mechanical refrigerator. 50% will use up pick use pickup balers. 70% use have flushable toilets in their house. Another 70% have running water or a bathtub in their house. Another 70% have tractors that they use for belt power. Another 70% have pneumatic tools. I don't know what that is. Do you know what that is?
Pneumatic is like air
Okay.
powered, like air
75%
compressor.
will use a chainsaw. 90% will use pressurized lamps since they don't use normal electricity. And 97%, this shocked me the most that I saw this, that they use motorized washing machines. You'd think that that would be one of the things that they wouldn't want. Yeah, that's really electricity. But I guess if when you have seven kids, you need to use a lot of electricity, or you need to do a lot of laundry. So in Kansas itself, in 1992, there were 675 Amish people, and in 2021, there are 2,135. So that number has grown exponentially over the course of the last 35 years. So what's interesting, and I only thought about this after I did the research, is that when you're looking at this, I mean, this movie was filmed in New York, so I didn't even check about New York. I was just checking Kansas, which is where they're supposed to be. So that's all I have about the Amish. I think that was enough.
Yeah, one other thing that I noticed about that is it has the orange triangle on the back of it to signify a slow-moving vehicle. And there was a public service announcement commercial that I was remember whenever I lived in Illinois that I thought was hilarious because it's about I think it came on like towards the summer, and it was warning about whenever you're driving, look out for slow moving like farm vehicles that are on the road at this time. And the PSA specifically mentioned you can tell these slow moving vehicles because they have this triangular reflector on the back that signifies that it's a slow moving vehicle. And my thought is, yeah, it's the triangle on the back, not the fact that it's a giant piece of lawn equipment, of farm
Exactly.
equipment
Little buggy.
driving down the highway. No, it's the reflector that signifies that it's a slow-moving vehicle. And it's not like, I mean, I could understand at nighttime, but
Well,
they're not going to be
apparently they
driving
are,
out
but
at
where are they
night
going to go?
either because you don't.
They're not going out to bars, as far as I know. So
Yeah.
who knows? But you see, but the thing was, is the reflector that pointed out to me that this was an Amish buggy. If they wouldn't have had that reflector there, I probably wouldn't have even noticed it. It's what helped it stand out. So what I also checked was, is where is the largest population of Amish in Kansas? And it's in a town known as Yoder, which is actually very close to Newton. So that makes sense also, that you would find this Amish horse and buggy right nearby the people train station. Can you think of any movies that deal with Amish people, or that have Amish people predominantly featured in them?
I mean, really, the only one is probably like the most famous one, and I haven't seen it, but I know of it, and that's Witness.
Right. Okay, that's one. So the only other one that I could think of offhand was the Frisco Kid with Gene Wilder, where he's traveling from Pennsylvania all the way to San Francisco, and he gets robbed and is found in a ditch by a whole bunch of Amish people, and he's a Hasidic rabbi from Poland, and he sees them and thinks that he's also seeing a bunch of his own people there. And he runs to them, and then he notices that they have a Bible with a cross on it, and he faints, because he starts speaking to them in Yiddish, and they don't understand Yiddish because they know just German. So I always thought, for me, being a religious Jew, it always that scene always is very funny for me, the way that plays out. So the pickup then pulls into town. And we get a nice long shot of the actual town itself. And as I mentioned earlier, we get to see some of the stores that are across the way from where they're pulling into, I guess, the train station, because we don't see this side of the road, but we see the other side of the road. So we can see three different stores across the way. Did you notice what any of them are called?
I mean,
Can you read it or not really?
I think I can't read the one. The other one is the Stubville Auction House.
Yeah, so it's the Stubbsville Auction House, which it does not look like a real sign. It looks like something they actually did just make up for the movie, that it says it's Stubbsville. But it's still nice detail that they added that in. You got the little gazebo in the middle. So maybe this was filmed, in the same place as Groundhog Day. Who knows?
And it is
And
that
then we have
Sunbean Bread?
Yes, very good. Sunbeam Bread. So I actually had to look that up, and it's a franchise of bread that they make white bread rolls and other baked goods, and it's owned by the Quality Bakers of America Corporation, or corporation. That's weird. It's this corporation instead of corporation. And they have regional bakeries all around the country. The brand was originally launched in 1942, and it was first marketed in New Bedford, Massachusetts. And the annual sales of their bread products as of 2021 is $400 million a year, which is just astounding to hear that type of number on that type of thing. And then the third store there is a place that it just says Park Avenue. I tried figuring out what it was, and I couldn't really figure it out because anything I, any search I did on Park Avenue brought me to New
Yeah.
York City. So I wasn't able to figure out because I can't read the word underneath it. I think it might say Park Avenue Discount, but I have absolutely no idea. That's just a guess. So the truck pulls in to, again, what looks like what is assumed to be the train station, and we get to see Owen's wife holding the baby still, and we see the dog pleasantly looking at both of our heroes, Neil and Dell, in the back of this truck. And then they do a great job here because they give us shots of all three of them in the back of the pickup truck. And first we see Dell, and he looks completely frozen. They have his mustache and his eyebrows and his hat and his earmuffs, and everything is just covered in little icicles or
Like
little bits of
frost.
snow, who knows, and frost. Yeah. And he just looks like he's really freezing from that. And the way
It's almost
that
like he
John
got
Candy,
flocked.
the way that John Candy's teeth are sitting there is pretty funny. And then we get a shot of Neil, which also same thing. He's got all this frost on him. His eyebrows are completely white. His hair, which Steve Martin's hair is always white, but it still looks pretty funny the way that it is because we're not used to seeing his eyebrows white, I guess. Maybe that's what makes it even funnier. And he's clenching his teeth also, and you can see that he is also freezing. And then the money shot is the next one where they show the dog also just completely covered in frost.
Yeah, that gives me a laugh, and the dog
And
is still snarling, and it gives the impression that he's
exactly.
just been snarling at them the entire way.
Yeah, completely. And we see Dell's trunk in the back, also covered with dust. We see Dell's briefcase with the bungee cord around it and stuff like that. So,
And
we know that their bags made it with
I
them.
noticed that I don't know if you can if. It was visible earlier, but Dell locks his trunk with two padlocks,
He's
not
got three,
three.
actually. There, well, in this shot, no, in this shot you can
You can see two of them
see.
clearly, that but there might be one
Right, there's a.
that,
Right, beforehand we saw that there were three. Maybe he lost one along the way.
or it
Could
could
be.
just be the
In the
third
shot,
one
you're right.
is
It
like just hidden behind the other two.
yeah, could be. Could be. Then we get to see them show up at the train station. We see a train pulling in. Neil is standing at the ticket counter, and he's pulling out his wallet, and Dell is standing there looking at the train coming in. Now, did you notice that there's like a barrel behind Dell that is on fire?
No, I didn't notice that.
Maybe that's just to keep people warm. I don't know, but it's just very strange that you'd have that. Maybe it's supposed to be like Hicksville in Stubbsville, so that's what they do to let people stay warm or something like that. So it's pretty funny. And then as the train moves along, so Dell starts to wave at the people on the train, which again says so much about his character. He's just an all-around friendly guy, saying hello to everybody, not caring what people are going to think or anything like that. And then we see Neil paying for the ticket. And then Neil pulls out his wallet to pay and then hands over a credit card and then gets it back and puts it back into his pants. And then we get to hear an extra saying to somebody, bye. And at that point, Neil turns around and getting ready to leave the ticket stand or whatever it is. And that's pretty much how we end this minute. So did you have anything else you wanted to say about this minute?
No, I don't think so. I think we covered it pretty well.
Okay, great. So and every episode I also talk about the differences in the script. So there's only one discrepancy in this minute from the script. In the original script, I mean, one of the things we talked about last week is that there was a big fight between, or an argument between Owen and Neil and Dell about letting his wife put stuff into the back of the put their stuff back into the back of the pickup truck. And Owen also wanted his wife and kids to sit in the back and let them sit up front. So the only discrepancy here is that she's the one who goes over and easily lifts up the trunk and takes it out of the pickup. So it goes to show that either the trunk is really, really light, which is probably not true, or she really is as strong as he says that she is. So yeah, that's all I have for this minute. So every Monday we do a segment called Martin Monday, where my guest will give their top five performances of Steve Martin. So, oh wait, what are your top five Steve Martin movies?
Yeah,
Performances.
this was actually a little bit more difficult because I realized that that's the majority of my Steve Martin movie viewing has been back whenever I was a teenager, and I had a very long gap, and I haven't seen much from him until just recently, whenever I started watching Only Murders in the Building.
I have yet to see that. I need to.
Yeah, I watched the first couple episodes. I really enjoyed it, but I just haven't found the time to get back to it yet because there's always something else that distracts me from it. But I did really enjoy it, and I do want to finish the season. And he's great in that as like a failed actor. Or like an actor, in the twilight of his career.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. All right,
Yeah, and
so what are your top five? Let's start with your bottom and work your way up.
I think my bottom, well, the fifth out of the
Exactly,
five would
exactly.
be the jerk.
Okay.
That's I think he just really embodies that character, and I think it's different, slightly different than the type of character that he is more or less known for, and the type of character that he plays in this, where he kind of transition into the more exasperated character, and this is just, he just plays an idiot jerk.
All
It's
right.
a lot of fun.
Great. Number four.
Number four would be the Three Amigos.
That's a fun movie.
Yeah, that's one that I fondly remember from my childhood, although I couldn't really tell you much about the movie anymore, other than them doing the Three Amigos chant.
Right, that's true.
I think my next one would be Roxanne.
Oh, I love Roxanne. I think that's
Yeah.
it's almost a perfect movie because it's such a great adaptation.
Yeah, I think that the way he plays the character especially is what helps it so much. And again, that is, he's not playing the exasperated character like he is here. He's playing, someone like the Cyrano de Bergerac type character. And then I think the next one up would be this one, Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. He's exasperated, but the more I thought about this movie, and especially whenever I was like looking into these minutes in more detail, he is really a nice guy down at heart.
He has a great arc here.
Yeah. And you can see that throughout. Like even in some of the earlier moments, just the way he acts and the decisions that he makes, most of them come from a place of doing the right thing, doing the nice thing. It's just he gets fed up by the circumstances.
Yeah. All
And
right.
then I think my favorite is his character in Baby Mama. Just this.
I don't think I've ever even seen that. What's Baby Mama?
It's a fairly recent movie with Tina Fey and Amy Poehler, where Amy Poehler or Tina Fey wants to have a baby, and so she gets a surrogate, and Amy Poehler is like the white trash surrogate that she hires,
It's actually
and
funny
she
that I
ends
said
up.
I didn't hear of it. I've seen it. I just forgot about it.
Yeah, and Steve Martin plays like the douche, the D-bag, like boss character with the very hippie vegan, or all about auras and stuff like that. Like he rewards people with 5 minutes of direct eye contact,
Oh, wow.
and just this new age. He's trying to find a location for his store that has a good that has good energy.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And he
Interesting.
just plays this character so well, and I love it. Just so full of himself, but also so oblivious to everything else around him.
Right. I saw that movie almost 5 years ago. So that's probably why I don't remember it. Because I've seen thousands of movies since.
Yeah, I watched it again this year because we went through a bunch of pregnancy related movies
Yeah, makes sense.
as my wife was pregnant.
Yeah, that makes sense. All right, another segment that we do every day is known as Off the Beaten Track, where either my guest or myself will give a little adventure or misadventure, some sort of anecdote of something that happened to them or me along the way through the journey of life. So, Bubbly, what story would you like to tell us?
Well, it's not a super exciting story, but one thing that I always remember is we did take a lot of road trips whenever I was a kid, and I think whenever I was a young teenager, I have two older sisters, and much older, about 10 years older almost, and she was actually living in Arizona at the time, and we were in central Illinois, and so over the summer we, me and my parents, we took a road trip to Arizona, and it was about a like a Saturday through the next Sunday
Wow.
trip where we drove from Illinois to Arizona. So it was about 3 days there, and we spent 2 days. 2 or 3 days in Arizona and then another 3 days
Wow. And I
back.
used to complain when my parents would take me on a 12-hour trip.
Yeah,
Wow. All right. Cool. That is very good. So, but wait, how can people get in touch with you?
I you know that I think the main place where you can find all my stuff is at Twitter, where I'm at Bubba Wheat. And my main site's longest running site is still Flights, Tights, and Movie Nights.com, where I have written reviews of over 500 superhero and comic book
All right,
movies.
very cool. And to find me is quite simple also. Just do a quick search for Movie Rob Bennett. You can find me on Twitter. You can go to our website, or you can find me on Facebook. So, feel like coming back again tomorrow, Bubba Wheat?
Yeah, I think so.
All right, excellent. So, until tomorrow, you're
Here.